I want you to visualize something for a second. It is arguably the most boring object in any hospital room or veterinary clinic or laboratory for that matter.
Without a doubt.
Right. It's clear, it's flexible, and it usually just hangs there, sort of draped over a bed rail or maybe coiled up on a counter. We're talking about medical tubing.
Yeah, it is the absolute definition of passive. It's the background noise of healthcare.
Exactly. It's just this plastic highway getting fluid from point A to point B.
You really don't even notice it until it kinks or, leaks.
Or until you trip over it. But here is why we are talking about it today. We're doing a deep dive into a technical breakdown from BombyMed. They're a major provider in medical and veterinary equipment, and they've laid out this fascinating case.
It really is.
They argue that this innocent-looking plastic tube is actually the front line of a microscopic war. We are diving into the technology of antimicrobial tubing.
And it is a surprisingly complex battlefield, honestly,
Yeah.
because when you look at a standard PVC tube, you see a tool. But when a microbiologist looks at it,
They see something totally different.
they see real estate. They see a potential colony.
Which is just a terrifying thought to start us off with. But it sets the stage perfectly for what we're doing today. We are going to look at how these materials are engineered to fight back, why the connectors, those little plastic bits at the
The
end,
connectors are a whole story.
right, why they are actually the most dangerous part of the system. And we'll get into the economics of why you'd actually pay a premium for a tube that fights germs. But let's start with the definition.
Good idea.
Because I feel like antimicrobial is this massive buzzword right now. I see it on everything from workout socks to kitchen cutting boards.
It is completely a buzzword, which is exactly why we need to be precise here. BombyMed defines antimicrobial tubing specifically as fluid transfer tubing that's engineered to actively inhibit microbial growth on or within its structure.
Okay.
But we really need to pause on that one word, inhibit.
Why is that the keyword?
Because there is this massive misconception out there that antimicrobial means sterile. It does not.
I have to admit, that was my assumption going into this deep dive. I figured, if I touch the specialized tubing, the bacteria just die instantly, like a bug zapper.
I mean, that would be amazing, but no. Sterility is an absolute state. It means zero living organisms. Antimicrobial describes a functional characteristic. It means the material is resistant to colonization.
Resistant.
Right. Think of it less like a nuclear bomb that just vaporizes everything on contact, and more like, like hostile architecture.
Or I like that hostile architecture.
It creates an environment where it is incredibly difficult for the bacteria to adhere, to replicate, or to build a permanent home.
So it's not necessarily killing them on contact, it's just preventing them from setting up shop.
Well, it can do both, depending on the exact chemistry they're using, but the primary goal is preventing that colonization.
Yeah.
Because once bacteria colonize, they form these structures that are nearly impossible to remove. The whole game here is to interrupt that initial adhesion.
Okay, so if standard tubing is just a passive conduit like a dumb pipe, this antimicrobial stuff is an active participant in the safety protocol.
Exactly.
How do they actually pull that off, though? I mean, we are talking about plastic. How do you make a piece of plastic hostile?
The source material details two core strategies for this. The first is what they call incorporated agents, or compounded integration.
Compounded integration. Sounds expensive.
It's thorough. Imagine you are making a loaf of bread. You don't just paint the crust with flavor, right? You mix the ingredients into the dough before you bake it.
Okay, I follow you.
In this case, they mix the antimicrobial agents directly into the polymer matrix, that raw plastic soup, before the tubing is even molded or extruded.
So the germ-fighting capability is literally baked into the DNA of the tube, so to speak.
That's right. It offers completely uniform distribution throughout the entire cross-section of the material. So if the tube gets scratched or nicked or cut in half, the surface underneath has the exact same antimicrobial properties as the outside layer.
That makes a lot of sense. And the second method.
Surface treatment. This is where the tubing is fabricated first, and then it's coated or chemically bonded with antimicrobial compounds afterwards.
So that's the painted crust on the bread.
In a manner of speaking, yeah.
Yeah.
And there are valid engineering reasons for using both methods, but the challenge and the technical breakdown really highlights this is the material science itself. We aren't just dealing with any run-of-the-mill plastic here.
Right, it's medical grade.
Exactly. We are looking at silicone, PVC, polyurethane, thermoplastic elastomers.
And they have extremely strict requirements.
Huge requirements. They have to be flexible, they have to be durable, and usually they need to be highly transparent so the staff can actually see the fluid line.
Oh, sure. You need to see if there are air bubbles or blockages.
Right. So if you overload the plastic with too many antimicrobial additives, you might accidentally make the tube brittle, or you might make it cloudy.
So it's this massive balancing act for the engineers.
Yep.
You need enough of the killer agent in the mix to be effective, but not so much that you ruin the physical properties of the tube.
Precisely. And that leads directly into the durability trade-off. Surface coatings can be incredibly effective initially, but think about the actual life of a medical tube.
It's rough.
It really is. It's dragging across bed sheets. It's being aggressively wiped down with harsh chemicals. It's being bent, twisted, clamped.
So the coating just wears off over time.
Abrasion is the absolute enemy of the surface treatment. Once you scour off that top protective layer, you're basically back to standard passive plastic.
Which is why the text suggests that the integrated additives that baked-in method often provide more sustained performance.
Yes. But even that isn't perfect.
Wait, why not? If it's mixed all the way through the plastic, isn't it permanent?
You have to extensively validate that those agents stay inside the plastic. You do not want them leaching out into the fluid.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
If you're delivering medicine or nutrition to a patient, you want them to get the medicine. You don't want them getting a dose of antimicrobial silver ions or harsh chemicals leaching from the walls of the tube.
That seems like a massive safety hurdle.
It is a massive hurdle. The regulatory validation for leaching is just as rigorous, if not more so, than the validation for the antimicrobial efficacy itself.
Okay, so let's say we somehow have the perfect tube. The chemistry is totally balanced, the agent is embedded, it isn't leaching, it's flexible, it's clear. I'm feeling pretty safe at this point.
You'd think so.
Right. But this is where the deep dive took a turn that I really didn't expect. The source suggests that the tubing itself isn't actually the weak link in the chain.
Not at all. If you are looking for the critical failure point in these systems, you look at the junctions.
The connectors.
Yep.
The lure locks, the barbed fittings, those quick connect couplings. Why is a tiny connector so much more dangerous than 3 feet of tubing?
Think about the physics and the geometry of it. A tube is smooth. It's a continuous flowing surface. Fluid moves over it easily, and there really aren't many places for a microbe to hide.
Right.
A connector, on the other hand, is a highly complex mechanical device. It has threads, it has ridges, it has internal locking mechanisms.
Lots of nooks and crannies.
Exactly. The text explicitly calls them microgaps and crevices. From a bacterium's perspective, a smooth tube is like a flat, exposed desert. But a connector is a cave system.
Wow, a cave system.
It offers total protection from the physical flow of the fluid, and crucially, it offers protection from cleaning agents.
So a nurse could wipe down the outside of the connector with bleach, but the bacteria are tucked safely away inside the threads or under the seal.
Exactly right. And on top of that, you have pressure differentials. As fluid moves from the tube through a narrowing connector, the flow dynamics change. You can get turbulence, or worse, stagnation points.
Like little eddies in a river where the water just sits still?
Yes. Little dead zones where fluid pools. That is prime real estate for a bacterial colony to start forming.
And we can't forget, these are also the parts of the system that get handled the most.
That's the human element, which is always the biggest variable. A nurse, a vet tech, a lab researcher. They are constantly unscrewing these junctions, touching them with their gloves, laying them down on a tray, and then reconnecting them. Every single manual interaction is a fresh contamination opportunity.
There is one specific detail in the report about material mismatch that I found really interesting. It sounded like an absolute engineering nightmare.
Oh, it is. And it's something people rarely think about.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say your tubing is made of a soft silicone. Silicone naturally expands and contracts quite a bit with heat. But your connector at the end is made of rigid PVC.
Okay, so you have a soft material attached to a hard material.
Right. Now, you run warm fluid through that line, or maybe you put the whole assembly through a high-heat sterilization cycle. The silicone expands at one rate, and the PVC expands at a completely different rate.
Which creates stress.
Exactly. That thermal stress right at the junction point can cause microfractures in the material.
Just tiny little cracks.
Tiny cracks that are way too small to cause a physical fluid leak that you'd see with your naked eye, but they're plenty big enough to house a few million bacteria.
Mm.
A microfracture is basically a VIP back door for pathogens.
So if I'm reading the source right, the argument is that you can't just slap a fancy, expensive antimicrobial tube onto a cheap, standard connector. The connector needs to be just as high tech as the tube.
It's what they call a closed loop argument.
Yeah.
You need the antimicrobial properties integrated into the connector itself, molded right into the assembly. Because if you break that chain of protection at the junction, the integrity of the entire fluid line is compromised.
Which brings us to what actually happens when that integrity fails. We've been using the word colonization, but the text gets much more specific. It talks a lot about biofilms.
Biofilms are the ultimate enemy in fluid transfer.
I feel like biofilm is just a very polite scientific word for slime.
I mean, it effectively is slime, but it's highly organized, intelligent slime. When bacteria successfully adhere to a surface, they don't just sit there naked. They actually secrete a matrix, this tough, protective, gooey, polymeric layer that entirely shields the colony.
It's like they build their own bunker inside the tube.
A bunker is the perfect analogy, because once a biofilm fully forms, the bacteria living inside that matrix are incredibly resistant to standard antibiotics and chemical disinfectants.
Really?
Oh, yeah. They can easily survive concentrations of cleaners that would instantly kill a free-floating bacterium. And here's the worst part. In a fluid system, chunks of that biofilm can occasionally break off.
Like sloughing off into the current.
Yes.
Yeah.
Slough off and travel downstream.
Right into the patient.
Or right into your critical sample. If you're working in a lab, that's exactly where you get massive system degradation and cross-contamination events.
So this brings up the million-dollar question for me. If I spend the budget and buy this top-tier antimicrobial tubing system, the embedded agents, the special connectors, the whole high-tech package, does that mean I can finally skip the cleaning protocol?
Absolutely not. And I want to be very emphatic about this because the source material is incredibly emphatic about
it. So it's definitely not a magic wand.
The breakdown asks that question directly. Does antimicrobial tubing replace sterilization? The answer is a hard, non-negotiable no. It is purely a supplemental risk mitigation layer.
Supplemental. Okay, so it's the airbag, not the driver.
That's a brilliant analogy. You still have to drive the car safely. You still have to do the manual cleaning and the chemical sterilization. The high-tech tubing is just there to catch whatever you inevitably miss.
So what does it actually do then if I still have to scrub everything?
The text lists four tangible benefits, and you'll notice none of them replaces cleaning. They are.
Mm.
It delays surface colonization. It reduces the overall microbial load accumulation. It lowers the burden on the downstream cleaning process, and it supports longer operational uptime.
Delays colonization seems like the really critical one in that list. It basically buys you time.
It buys you a critical margin of error. Look, in a perfect theoretical world, cleaning protocols are 100% effective every single time.
But we live in the real world.
Exactly. In the real world, maybe you missed a microscopic spot on the connector thread. Maybe the sterilization cycle was interrupted a minute early. The antimicrobial tubing prevents that one tiny human error from spiraling into a massive biofilm outbreak before the next scheduled cleaning cycle.
Now, speaking of the real world, the report highlights some very specific use cases for this tech. It mentions nutritional feeding systems, infusion assemblies, but it spends quite a bit of time focusing on veterinary surgical setups and laboratory environments.
It does.
And it brings up a very specific, stubborn challenge in those particular environments, organic matter.
Bioburden is the technical industry term, but honestly, gunk works just fine too.
Let's stick with gunk. Why is gunk such a unique problem for this advanced technology?
This is a really fascinating limitation of the physics involved. Most of these antimicrobial surfaces work strictly on contact. The embedded silver ion, or the chemical agent, needs to physically touch the outer cell wall of the bacterium in order to disrupt it.
Okay, that makes sense.
But in a veterinary surgery setting or a busy lab, you often have high levels of organic matter. We're talking blood, tissue fragments, heavy proteins. If a microscopic layer of that organic stuff coats the inside of the tube, it acts as a physical shield.
Oh, I see. So the bacteria are just sitting on top of the layer of blood, and the fancy antimicrobial plastic is trapped underneath the blood.
Exactly. The bacteria are essentially floating on a little raft of organic matter. They aren't even touching the engineered plastic anymore, so they are completely safe.
That is such a vivid image. The raft. And that completely negates all the expensive technology.
Yeah, absolutely negates it. That's why the text explicitly warns that high organic matter can shield microorganisms from contact-based surfaces. It reinforces exactly why manual cleaning is always primary. You have to physically scrub the raft away so the tubing can actually touch the bacteria and do its job.
It's not just the bugs and the gunk we have to worry about, though. The environment itself attacks the tube, doesn't it?
It does. The material naturally degrades over time, UV exposure is a massive one.
Like sunlight.
Sunlight, or even those intense UV sterilization lights they use in hospitals. They can actively break down the polymer chains. Then you have mechanical abrasion from constant handling and temperature extremes.
And there was a really interesting note in the source about sterilization methods. I feel like we usually just think, well, kill it with fire, right? Boil it, use high heat. But apparently high heat is actually bad for these specific tubes.
It really can be. Repeated high-temperature autoclaving can physically degrade certain antimicrobial compounds. You might literally cook the chemical protection right out of the plastic over time.
Oh, wow.
So the source suggests that using ethylene oxide gas or other low-temperature chemical methods might be better for preserving the material's integrity. So you're left with this frustrating paradox. You absolutely need to clean it to make it work, but if you clean it the wrong way, you permanently destroy it.
Which makes the whole procurement strategy incredibly complicated for a buyer, because I have to assume this specialized tubing isn't cheap.
Oh, it is definitely not cheap. You are paying for advanced polymer chemistry, years of rigorous regulatory validation, and highly complex manufacturing processes.
So if I'm a hospital administrator, or say I'm running a large network of vet clinics, how on earth do I justify that upfront cost?
Yeah.
I can buy a standard roll of passive PVC tubing for pennies on the dollar.
You have to completely shift your institutional thinking. You have to move away from looking at unit cost and start looking at total system risk.
Explain how that works in practice.
Okay, what is the hard financial cost of a single hospital-acquired infection? Or what is the cost of completely shutting down a research lab for a week because your samples got cross-contaminated? What did the lethal liability cost?
Thousands of dollars. Maybe millions, depending on the scale.
Exactly. The antimicrobial tubing is essentially an insurance policy against those catastrophic events. The breakdown argues that you aren't paying for a piece of plastic. You are paying for reduced contamination incidents, lower daily cleaning burdens, and significantly less operational downtime.
That makes a lot of business sense.
If you can extend the safe operational life of a feeding setup by just 20% because a biofilm isn't forming as fast, that efficiency pays for the premium tube right there.
But you do have to be careful about what you're actually buying. The regulatory and compliance section of the breakdown sounded a bit like a harsh warning label.
It really should be read as a warning label. Manufacturers love to make bold marketing claims, you know, kills 99.9% of all germs. But the source specifically warns buyers about overstated claims. You need to demand actual validation of two things: biocompatibility and duration of efficacy.
Duration of efficacy, meaning does it work for 10 minutes or does it work for 10 days of continuous use?
Exactly. And more importantly, does it work in the real world? BOMED makes a very pointed statement in their analysis. They say that laboratory efficacy does not automatically translate into field performance.
That's the classic works in a petri dish problem.
Right. In a pristine petri dish, you don't have sudden temperature fluctuations, you don't have degrading UV light, you don't have abrasion from a nurse dropping it, and you certainly don't have those rafts of organic matter blocking the surface. Real-world duty cycles are brutal on these materials.
So bringing this all together, knowing all this about the complex material science, the massive risks hiding inside the connectors, the environmental degradation, what would you say is the big takeaway from this deep dive?
I think the real takeaway is about managing our expectations of technology.
Mm-hmm.
We have this deep tendency to look for technological saviors. We want to buy a product that just solves the entire problem of hygiene for us automatically.
Just buy the magic germ-killing tube and we're permanently safe.
Right. But this breakdown shows us that safety is always a holistic system. The antimicrobial tubing is an undeniably powerful tool. It is a critical safety net in high-risk environments, especially in closed-loop surgeries or sensitive nutritional delivery. But it still relies entirely on the fundamentals.
It relies on the human operating the system.
It relies on the human to thoroughly clean the connector crevices, to scrub away the organic matter, and to choose the correct non-destructive sterilization method. The technology significantly raises our baseline of safety, but it absolutely does not eliminate our need for diligence.
You know, I just can't stop thinking about that raft image you brought up earlier. The bacteria just casually floating on top of the organic matter, safely insulated above this incredibly high-tech surface.
It really sticks with you, doesn't it?
It does, and it leads me to a final thought for everyone listening to this right now. We spend billions of dollars globally developing these molecular-level defenses. We literally engineer plastics that are chemically hostile to life itself. But according to this technical report, all of that brilliant, expensive sophistication can be completely defeated by just a simple, microscopic layer of dirt.
It is a very humbling reality for the medical tech industry.
It effectively means that our most advanced safety technology doesn't actually rely on the genius of the polymer chemistry. It relies strictly on how well we scrub the surface before the technology even gets a chance to work.
We're basically still living in the age of the scrub brush, no matter how advanced our plastic gets.
That is a very sobering thought to take with you to your next doctor's visit. Well, thank you for diving into this with us today.
It was my pleasure. Anytime.